Welcome to Living on Purpose. I'm Mark Pumphrey, along with my co-host, Dr. Christy Stewart, coming to you from the Circle City, Indianapolis, Indiana. And we're doing another show during the pandemic. So today we have Dr. Guest Marsha Epic Harris.
Still love the name.
I know, it's a great name. I know we talked about that
before.
It
hasn't changed since last time.
That's right. Never change the name. And she was on our Words Matter show. She's a creative director, writer, and editor. And her new venture is voiceovers for audiobook narrations. Mm-hmm. Also, you are a Shakespeare Independent Scholar, which I got to tell you, kudos to you, because that is a hard, hard thing. You know, I've seen a couple of Shakespeare's plays. Don't quite get them.
The wife has to explain it to
me. She does. She has to explain them to me. But today we're going to talk about the arts, how they're struggling, what they've done for us during the pandemic, and how we can keep them going. So I want to thank you for coming out, you know, venturing this whole pandemic and coming and doing the show so we can talk about this, because I think the arts are very important. They actually give us an escape. And even though we don't really realize it, the arts are happening on your TV, Netflix, you know, Disney Plus. Yeah. You're watching the arts as you're getting through this now. So thank you again for coming onto the show and talking about this today.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Kind of get us started with this. What are we kind of talking about when we're saying how to keep the arts going, how we're going to try to keep them surviving?
So many things have been canceled because of the pandemic. Personally, I've had two plays that were supposed to be produced in May, and both of them were postponed. Happily, one of them is part of a 10-minute play festival that is supposed to be put back on stage in August.
Hopefully,
yeah.
That's good.
Fingers crossed. And an outdoor venue at Indie Fringe downtown. But I'm obviously not the only person who had lots of things canceled. There have been concerts canceled, theater, plays canceled. You know, you can't go to the art museum if you want to. You can't go travel abroad and go to all the brilliant museums, you know, in Europe and wherever else, you know. So it's been really, really tough for all of these different venues to figure out ways to survive. And because I am a playwright, I've been focusing the most of my attention on what's going on in the theaters. And I've seen lots and lots of different creative things going on. For instance, you know, Shakespeare is my bread and butter. So I've been watching the Globe Theatre in London has been streaming a few plays from, you know, different productions
from the past.
From the past that they have recorded. For instance, they did Two Noble Kinsmen in, can't remember exactly what year it was that they did that show. Another show that I saw was A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I know that that one was from 2013. But both of those productions were streamed on YouTube, a recording of a live show that was streamed on YouTube. They were available, I think, for a week or 2 weeks at a time. Currently, Midsummer Night's Dream is still available for another week, and it's so good.
So you say.
Oh, no. It was amazing.
And these are.
If I watch it, I'd be sitting there going, I wonder what that's about.
And so those are productions in London.
Yes.
Because they have for people who don't know, London has their own version of Broadway, does the same Broadway plays as our Broadway plays, and they're a fraction of the cost.
Oh my gosh.
And they are really, really good. Like when we went to go see Harry Potter in London,
yeah,
we could fly to London, our hotel.
Or you fly with Harry Potter.
There you go. See the play, and it was two sittings. And fly home for cheaper than it was to buy a ticket on Broadway in New York City.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of theaters in England are subsidized by the government. The Globe Theater is not. It is a charity, and so they don't get any subsidies from the government. However, they do get lots of donations. I believe they have a foundation. And of course, people go there to see Shakespeare from all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really for everybody, you know. I mean, you can get, you know, expensive tickets, quote-unquote expensive tickets, and you can get cheap tickets. You know, you can stand. It's like the groundlings area is where you can stand and watch the play for only £7. Which is really cheap. You can't see any professional theater in America for that
cheap. Under
$10. Yeah. Or you could sit in like the most expensive seats, which I think are like maybe £65 or £70. But even that is still really
pretty cheap.
Fraction
of the cost of New York City.
Yeah. I mean, I saw this is obviously pre-pandemic. This was in 2016. I saw a production of Richard III at the Almeida Theatre in London, starring Ralph Fiennes. And I paid £35 for a ticket to see a really, really famous star on stage. And the whole production was full of stars, people you would recognize from TV, you know, and it was amazing, £35. I also saw David Tennant, who was a Doctor Who and, you know, was in Broadchurch and very famous in, he was in one of the Harry Potter movies. And I think that was the most expensive theater ticket I ever had in London. It was £150 for the fourth row to see David Tennant. And it was a show called Don Juan in Soho, a kind of update of the Don Juan story. And he got into, I mean, he was in his underwear in Act Two. And, you know, he's like 15 feet away from me. I'm like, wow, this was worth the money.
That's awesome. I've seen Phantom of the Opera. I wanted to see Phantom of the Opera because I thought, now, that's, know, Phantom of the Opera in London. It's in its own theater.
Well, I mean, that's a specific theater, right, that they played in?
I
don't remember.
Well, I was surprised with Harry Potter because their theater, it's not like ours that we kind of decorate them a little bit for the and theme it. I mean, this was decked out Harry Potter.
Oh, really?
And I think the Phantom of the Opera one is the same. Mm. But they're not theaters like kind of like ours that are just, you go to the theater and it's just, you sit in a seat and it's a lot different. It was quite impressive.
Well, and I've said this on the air before. I never really got into the theater until my wife forced me to go to The Music Man. Mm. And this was at our local dinner theater here, Beef and Boards. And I was mesmerized by this. And ever since then, I've really enjoyed. Now, not every show, obviously. But it is good to actually see people get out there and perform and mess up. I mean, it does happen. Mm-hmm. It's great to actually be a part of that.
Right.
And then now it's not. And I think that, you know, when you're sitting over there and you're talking about live theater and right now, I think that's a really hard thing for the actors and the patrons that want to go and see this.
It's super hard. And for the playwrights as well.
Well, of course, yes.
Yeah, it's super hard. Like I said, I had two plays that were supposed to be performed. One was in a 10-minute play festival, which again is going to be in August. And then the other was a full-length play called The Profession about higher education. It was picked up for the Indianapolis New Play Festival that was going to be put on by the Fat Turtle Theater Company and Indie Fringe, which is really obviously quite disappointing. All of them were going to be world premieres of four new plays. So it's really tough to be an artist right now. So my son takes oboe lessons, and he has a couple of different oboe teachers that he's worked with, and both of them are in the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, and of course their concerts have been, you know, canceled, and they both are professors. You know, schooling has been, you know, put on hold or canceled or rearranged, or, you know, we're doing oboe lessons over the phone,
yes.
You know, like on FaceTime, you know, and so it's really, really hard to be an artist of any kind right now. However, it also is a moment where we're trying to find creative ways in order to keep the arts alive and to get together and just try to share some stories. But I am the scene nights coordinator of the Indiana Playwrights Circle. And what we do is we get together once a week and we have six playwrights that will submit pages, like 10 pages at a time, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we have actors that volunteer and come to read those pages for us so that we can workshop our work while we're writing. It's really great. We get feedback and everything. And so we were getting together at the Broadway United Methodist Church, who is happily donating space to us so we could come together and meet.
Right.
Well, when the pandemic happened, you know, we thought, okay, this is just not going to be safe to get together. You know, there are lots of groups going into Broadway United Methodist Church, and we don't, you know, want to, like, be worried that, you know, anybody's spreading germs or whatever. We got to just, you know, lock down or whatever. And so that first week that we were closed down, we just canceled scene night. And we're like, oh, God, what are we going to do? I don't know. Oh, I don't know. And it turned out that the Indiana Writers Center had a Zoom account. And they said, well, if you want to use that, you can use it. So we thought we'd try it out and do just a test run of scene night. We'd get together and have the actors come on and everything. And it has been the most incredible thing since the pandemic happened. The first time we got together, I thought, I don't know how this is going to work. This is going to be really hard.
It's going to be like that progressive commercial that comes on.
I mean, it's like one of those things where, you know, part of the, I don't know, the joy of it is just getting together and seeing people and saying, you know, how's your day and what's going on and whatever. And then hearing the stories and, you know, talking to the actors and whatnot. But it's been really great to do it on Zoom because so many more people can come. We've had people we had an actor who's come a couple of times who used to live in Indiana and now lives in Florida. And so is able to get on the Zoom call and do acting for us. We've had people from Michigan. We've had people from Ohio and California and Texas and whatever. So it's been really fantastic to be able to include people from not only out of state, but we've got a couple of regulars who come from Lafayette and Columbus and other places in Indiana, too. So it's been super great to be able to build this community. And we regularly have, you know, between 12 and 20 people showing up at scene night just to share stories together. I don't know about other people in the pandemic, but I have like super hard time like trying to keep my spirits up and just not feel like, oh my God, is this ever going to end? I'm never going to see friends again or whatever. Being able to see people during scene night and like just being able to escape from the world for 3 hours at a time has made all the difference in my mental health and my like ability to see beyond the pandemic. And if it weren't for writing and these wonderful actors and the wonderful writing community that we have, I'd probably be in a mental institution by now. I mean, it's just so crazy.
Well, now, do you find that the Zoom, and this is probably what we're talking about when we're talking about stretching our concept of how we're going to do this, right?
Right.
So do you find the Zoom, now that you can add more people in there, just as creative as being in the same room as them? Because a lot of times you get that energy and that feel and the body language and all these things. Do you find that to be the same, or do you have a workaround for that?
You know, we do have some workarounds, and we have been experimenting with this a little bit. Of course, not all internet connections are created equally, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as the technology is working, it works. But one of the things we've been doing for readings is we'll have everybody turn off their camera and their audio while the actors are reading. And so that helps us to focus on the story and the actors during the reading.
That's a clever idea. Okay.
And then when we do the reading, and then we have everybody come back in and we'll talk about the reading and we'll say, you know, if, you know, I like this about it and this could be improved, this confused me or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a way to have like a sort of intimate setting of, you know, let's listen to these actors and concentrate on what they're saying. And then we can bring everybody back in with the larger group setting where we can see everybody and ask them to raise their hands if they have, you know, comments or questions. And also people have been using the chat function of Zoom in a really interesting way. Sometimes they'll be making comments, the audience will be making comments while the actors are reading, and so you can see right away like what people are reacting to. So in a way, that's actually a really super, because as a playwright, I might like make a note in my script or something. If somebody writes something in the chat while that is being read, and then we can go back and discuss that and whatnot too. Plus, if you know, verbal comments are given and they're not written down, you may or may not remember them, and you could lose them. But chats can be saved.
That's right.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that that's really working out.
Now, do you think it makes you more creative now that you have a, let's say, a list of the things that people suggest? It gives you a little bit more insight?
Yeah. I mean, I think that you know, I personally really thrive being around live actual people.
Right.
And so I would really like to get back to the theater and get back to, you know, doing, in person readings and whatnot. But there are some advantages to doing the Zoom readings because of being able to keep the chat text and to be able to like really focus on what the actors are saying instead of being distracted by, you know, somebody's writing notes or somebody's like tapping their foot or whatever, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice. It's something to keep you from going insane as a creator in this pandemic where, you know, I've asked myself this question a couple of times. Is it even worth writing plays? Because who's going to put them on stage right now? Would it be better to write novels? Would it be better to write, you know, a memoir or whatever? I can't help but write plays because I love it.
Well, so, I was going to say, that's your love, that's your love.
Right,
you know?
Right. And so, you know, should I keep writing plays? Yeah, because there are people that want to come and listen to them, or I want to listen to their plays, and we want to workshop together, and it's a really wonderful community. So that's something that I think is really important if you're an artist, is to find something that's in your local community. I mean, we've talked about the Globe Theater and how amazing that is and how it's been a really great opportunity to see some shows that you never probably would be able to see. Like they did Two Noble Kinsmen, which is almost never produced anywhere. And so to see a hugely amazing production of that from the Globe on YouTube was a really wonderful opportunity. But being able to get connected to people who are in your local community is an even greater opportunity that can last beyond that YouTube video, you know?
Right.
You can form relationships and you can network and you can get good advice and just learn from people in your own neighborhood, you know?
I would think that that's a great idea. And obviously you have found a workaround, obviously a really nice workaround, and we're talking, this isn't going to last forever.
Right.
But I think that knowing that you have that in your back pocket, so if somebody, let's say, had to go on vacation or had to be in a different state or they were whatever, and they can get on Zoom with you guys and be a part of it. You know, it's a now thing, but it could be a long-lasting thing in right. different ways.
Well, we've talked about like the advantages too, because, you know, our founder, Andy Black, you know, he moved to Missouri, but he's been able to come to scene nights during the pandemic because we're on Zoom, you mm-hmm. know, and there have been lots of people who have taken advantage of that when they, you know, live far away, but they've been involved locally in Indianapolis.
And who says tech people aren't creative? Look at that. You brought a whole community together.
I know. And I mean, the thing is that even when we do start meeting up again, I think that there will probably be a hybrid component to it
yeah.
so that people who do live far away, you know, we even have a member who comes frequently on Zoom but had not been able to before because she works in Noblesville.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the place where we meet is closer to downtown. And so it's really hard for her to fight traffic to get downtown. So it's been super great to be able to have her around. And in a way, it's allowed the pandemic and being forced onto Zoom has allowed us to welcome more people in and get more creative about the readings that we do.
I was
going to
say, it sounds like it made you creative. It,
it
got
did.
You got creative it about did. Being creative.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now, talking about that, in, you know, now that you're actually in this and you're still having people come in and read and, you know, you take notes and everything, where do you see and has there been talk about where this is kind of going?
Yeah, so where it's going, that is like the real million-dollar question, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it changes
yeah,
daily.
It really does. And, you know, I mean, I think, like, me personally, I am so hungry to get back in the theater. And then there are some people who are really thinking, we're not doing any plays until there's a vaccine. It's kind of a contentious thing in the theater community itself right now. I think Actors Equity and Broadway and places like that are, you know, like groups and whatnot are saying, look, until there's a vaccine or until it's like really safe to have 1,000 people in a theater or more, it's just not happening. And, you know, and there are some places in Indianapolis that are going to put on shows this summer.
What about outside?
Yeah, so some of them are doing outside shows, like the 10-Minute Play Festival mm-hmm. will be outdoors at Indie Fringe. But some of the places that are putting on shows are not going to be outside. They're going to be in indoor theaters where people will be socially distanced, like Beef and Boards is a theater that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's a like a three-quarters round theater with tables, a dinner theater. And, I think their capacity is something like 500 people, and they're going to knock it down to half that. So,
oh, and then just do sporadic table, every other table or something?
And they normally will have a buffet, but they're going to do plated dinners instead.
So there are thinking about different ways of doing things. I mean, obviously we've seen that even with concerts, that old drive-in theaters are now becoming more popular because you can actually have a concert there and things of that, because that's a huge economic toll.
Oh my God, you're talking
a whole section of people and businesses, establishments that are taking an enormous toll. To think about how they're going to redesign, be more creative, try to get people in the door or outside the door, if you will, until we have a cure has got to be really hard. You know, I think it's really hard to be creative when you're so stressed out about things like that.
I know. And so there was an article today that the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, you know, of course, has furloughed their musicians, but now they're taking away their health insurance because they can't afford to continue to pay it for all these furloughed musicians, even though, you know, there is a endowment for the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. And so people are saying, oh, my gosh, you have this $97 million endowment. Why aren't you paying? But it's like, okay, yes, they have this endowment, but the endowment might have rules. The problem is that nobody knows how to survive in this environment.
Right.
And so I think musicians are actually even more hard-pressed because it's so hard to do live concerts online, especially if you have lots of musicians that are playing together, like the symphony orchestra or the chamber orchestra.
I mean, let's be for real. We have incredible mics now.
Yeah.
But there is something about being there and having the orchestra just bellow it out that you're just not going to get on your $9 speakers off your computer. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Well, and there are latency issues, you know, like there's not going to be a complete lineup of timing with everybody on Zoom. And, you know, maybe the microphone quality is not that good, or maybe the internet speed is not up to, you know, what this person is doing. And so my son is in the Indianapolis Youth Orchestra, and they've been trying to do things online, but it's mainly been like master classes, and it's impossible for everybody to play together in a setting that really mimics a live rehearsal or a live concert. I think it's been harder on musicians than just about anybody else.
Because people are watching more TV, more Netflix.
Which has also been a problem because a lot of television programs had to suspend because some of them have
The Restless is still not recording.
So, you know, you do have that going on. Yeah. So, and that's what I really wanted to get people to understand is you use the arts far more than you think that you do.
Right,
you know,
absolutely.
I know there's a lot of people, I don't care. I never watch a play. Yeah, but you watch TV. I don't care if you're watching reality
you
TV.
Turn your
there's
radio
somebody
on.
Writing that,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know?
I mean, whether it be serious radio or, you know, your local FM channel. I mean, everybody turns their radio on.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And, I mean, even your new venture is, as far as voiceovers. Somebody is taking part in that.
Mm-hmm.
So we all use the arts when we think, oh, well, it's no big deal. It is a huge deal because it gives you an escape. It lets you fantasize.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's taken away, especially for the actors, the musicians, the screenwriter, I mean, everybody. I mean, that's
and it
huge.
Was already taking a pretty big hit with cutbacks and all of those things anyway.
Right. Yeah, and so, you know, a lot of schools have cut back art programs and things like that, whether it's music or art or theater or whatnot. And so, you know, it feels like as an artist, you have to kind of keep justifying your existence all the time.
Doesn't it though? I imagine.
Yeah. But I also feel like this is a moment where we can, you know, hit pause and say, no, look, really, this really is important. I mean, think about how much you would miss it if you were never to hear music again, you know, or never to see a painting again. You guys have lots of like pictures and things on your walls, and we have art all over my house, you know. I actually collect Shakespeare art, which is like probably the nerdiest thing ever, right? My house would be completely boring if I didn't have art on the walls, if I didn't have the books, if I didn't have, you know, we have, God, I don't even know how many instruments we have. My husband and I, between the two of us, we play probably a dozen different things, and my son plays oboe and whatever. But yeah, I mean, how do you imagine the world without the arts? And I don't want to live in that world. So I'm right. just going yeah, to keep either. Doing it, you know. But, you know, there are things that can be done in the meantime. You know, everybody's binging on Netflix and whatnot.
Okay. Well, you sent some links to virtual museum yeah. tours that mm-hmm. were kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Museums are now yeah. putting links out that you can tour their museums.
Yeah, ooh. And I felt like one of the most really fascinating museum tours was the British Museum. They have a really fancy interface for that tour, and you can see things from literally all over the world in that museum. It's tremendous. I mean, it's already like one of the best museums in the entire world, but being able to take some tours there is really cool. Something else I really, really like is National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. They have a really great tour there. A couple of pretty educational tours that are really good. And then there are lots of virtual tour articles and things. You can find all kinds of stuff online if you just Google it. So yeah, I mean, I think there are things that are great that you can do that people are paying attention to now that maybe they hadn't paid attention to before. There's a museum in London that I never even heard of. I was just like looking around at museum tours and things like that. So the Soane Museum in London is a museum for an architect, a British architect. I believe his first name is John Soane. Anyway, they had, I think, 40, 45-minute documentaries on the restoration of that museum and how they restored, like, for instance, the wallpaper to its original splendor and had to recreate it and the pattern and everything and how they did all of that. And oh my God, those documentaries are just completely, unbelievably awesome. But I never would have found that if it weren't for, you know, sitting around in my house like, I need to do something intellectual, right. you know?
And well, but I think that that's a very good point because one of the things that we talk about, especially with art and the arts itself, is that it's subjective. You know, there is right. something out there for you if you want to go watch it. If you really want to know how wallpaper got restored, there's something out there for you. And right. there and an artist put that together. Mm-hmm. There was a director, there were actors, there were cameramen, yes, camera persons, you know. So I mean there are these things out there that we just don't think of. And I guess that's one of the things that I really want to make clear to people is that what we're doing right now, you're listening to us, it's a form of art.
Yeah.
You know, we're very informative and factual, but it's still a form of art, you know.
But, you know, I mean, there's art in everything. Even this table, somebody had to design this mm-hmm. table, you know. Somebody had to design the chairs we're sitting in. Somebody had to design the microphone we're talking in. You know, there is art in everything.
Yeah.
And yes, some of it is more utilitarian than other things, but we need to start appreciating that even just having crown molding in a room in a house is a way to decorate. It's and why are we decorating? Because we want to have a certain look, a certain feel, and that
because it makes us feel good.
It does make us feel mm-hmm. good, and that's part of the arts. If I am grateful for anything in this pandemic, it's that it's made me kind of pull back and slow down and think more clearly about what is important to me. And what is important to me, for sure, is that the arts survive because they give me so much. Being able to read a book is not, you know, everybody is so busy that maybe you don't have time to sit down and read a book. We were talking before the show about, you know, audiobooks and how they can be really useful if you're absolutely. Driving around or I love listening to audiobooks when I'm doing chores, you know, like yeah. You know, folding I'm with laundry you on that one. or
right.
or doing the dishes or whatever. And so it makes something that could be really boring and dreadful, like, you know, doing laundry. It makes it worth it. I look forward to it because I know that I can read while I'm doing it.
Awesome.
But gosh, you know, how long has it been that I've actually had time to sit down and read a book that's an actual book, you know?
It's hard, yeah.
When, how many people don't put thought process to somebody had to write that book?
I know.
Somebody, you know, goodness, I read this book and it was just amazing. And well, somebody had to create that. Somebody had to come up with all those characters and actually had to sit down and write it. And then there were other people who are editors and all of those people, things that go into that great book that you got to read. People don't consider that. And I think a lot of people don't think that. Even like, you know, you sit down and watch Netflix. You know, okay, oh, I love this actor. But you don't think about everything that went into that piece of art, whether TV show or whatever. Right, exactly. I mean, every piece of that. Mm-hmm. And all of those people right now are suffering.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. From the costumer to the writer to the actor to the director. Every single person that's involved in television, in radio, in writing, publishing companies, everybody is having to figure out creative ways to live through this moment. I can't even imagine what it's like in New York right now, because New York City relies so heavily on the arts and tourism for their economy. And New York, of course, obviously was hit really hard by the coronavirus. Until there's a cure or a vaccine or something that is, you know, I know that not everything is foolproof, but something that's really effective, it's going to be really, really tough on all of those people.
To get people to even, I mean, want to do it. That's the thing. That's the problem. Those people go back to it, but as you said, beef and boards, they're either going to have to cut the amount that they're paying people, or they're going to have to raise the prices so much that it's going to be really twice as expensive.
Right.
And you got to get those people that are willing to actually go and do that. There's so many factors involved in all of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and these are the things that are going to be trying for probably the next several years for them to do. But I think one of the things that might help is to be in remembrance of. Because like what we were talking about before the show started is plays that we really like, that we actually enjoyed seeing. And I think that if we keep those things in mind, then it'll be easier for the arts to come back. Because it's really easy once we forget not to do something.
Right. And we were talking the fact that there's so many that are now being put on YouTube or online that you can watch for free. I think you were talking about Hamilton. I didn't realize that. I knew Hamilton was being made into a movie, but I didn't realize it was coming out beginning of July.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, Hamilton is a really interesting situation. About 2 weeks before the entire original cast of the Broadway show went off and did their own things, they filmed the Broadway version of Hamilton with, as I said, all the original people in it, Lin-Manuel Miranda and so on. There was always an intention that that film would be shown probably in movie theaters, but probably not for a couple of years. Because, you know, Hamilton is still touring all over the United States. Well, it was anyway. And it still was
amazingly popular.
Yeah, amazingly popular. Still amazingly popular on Broadway. So Lin-Manuel Miranda had another musical called In the Heights that was made into a feature film. And that was supposed to premiere this summer in movie theaters. And then, of course, that's been pushed back. I guess the powers that be, Miranda himself and maybe, I don't know, other people involved with the show decided that they would put Hamilton on Disney Plus, which is a subscription service, but a lot of people have it. So Hamilton is now going to be on Disney Plus at midnight Pacific time, July 3rd.
Yeah, I'm anxious to watch. I didn't see the original cast. I've seen it twice, and both times it's been in Chicago.
Right. So. Yeah, and you know, and I've seen clips and everything, and it's just tremendous.
It is.
You know?
It's amazing.
And I saw it when it was in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. I was like in the second from the back top row, you know, so I could barely see. I should have brought opera glasses, but it was great, you know. And it's just it's a beautiful story and a really great musical. The thing that has always bothered me about Hamilton is how bloody expensive it is to go to it, right?
Exactly.
And so, you know, for less than $10, and, you know, a lot of people can get trial version of Disney Plus, so they could literally see it for free and then cancel if they wanted to. Although that's not what I'm recommending, but it's possible to see it for free now. Like I said, the thing that's always bothering me about Hamilton is how expensive it is to see it. And the people who really need to see it are people who are, like, the target audience. People who are minorities that have been sidelined by the theaters for so long, because it really has been a white person's, really a white man's game in theater for hundreds of years. And so really, women playwrights have not had much traction on Broadway and in the other, you know, upper echelons of theater. Actually, in London, in the West End, which is the Broadway equivalent, they're trying to do more plays by women and minorities and things like that. And so they're trying to, you know, go for a lot more equity. I know that's getting traction in the United States, and people are trying to do that. But, you know, for the vast majority of the history of American theater, it really has been mainly white male writers who have been dominating the stage. And so, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, his foray onto Broadway with In the Heights, which is about Hispanic people and their neighborhood and whatnot, and then Hamilton, you know, looking at American history, but using actors to portray white male characters or, you know, white female characters, but they're minorities who are doing the acting. It really reflects what America is now. It's not just a white man's place anymore. It's a true melting pot, and yet we need to see more diversity on stage still. So I think that the kids who are in, you know, public schools that are, you know, majority minority schools, those are the kids that need to see Hamilton.
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah.
And now they might have a chance to see it. And I think that is the most, I mean, I'm getting chills talking about it. To me, that's the most important thing that can happen, because not only is it just a really wonderful story, it can show that there are role models for kids to look up to. And it shows that it's possible to put your mind to something and achieve a goal and to be a part of musical history, musical theater history.
Or,
I mean, there's never been anything like Hamilton except for maybe In the Heights, you know? And
did your kids go and see Hamilton?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And so they don't have to see it. They've lived it.
It's kind of funny how I got into Hamilton. One of my students, when I was teaching, you know, asked me if I would talk about Hamilton in a class that we were taking suggestions of, like, topics to talk about on a, like, a humanities in the modern world kind of class, you know. And she said, "Will you talk about Hamilton?" I was like, "Well, I don't know anything about Hamilton. I guess I'll have to look it up." So I listened to it. I was just so blown away by it. And then I started listening to it in the car and stuff, and my kids were like, "What is this?" And Hamilton, oh! For years, they've had the whole thing memorized.
Oh, wow. So they've
and
got,
they just
this
love
is a family.
It. Oh, yeah. And so we went to see it together, and they were all, like, dancing in their seats and stuff, and, you know, trying to get them to not sing along or anything. So to be able to see it with the original cast of Hamilton is going to be so great. Oh, yeah.
Now, I've not had a chance to see it. I do have Disney Plus, so I will get that checked out, because it's not that I don't want to go, but you're right. I mean, when you're talking a ticket's $380 or something, you're like, ew.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, my mom bought us tickets as a Christmas present. Otherwise, we would not have gone.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little price. Maybe we should fly to London and watch Hamilton.
I actually, seriously, it would have been cheaper to fly to London during the winter to see Hamilton and the West End. It would have been cheaper.
Well, it definitely was cheaper to go to London to see Harry Potter than it was to go get one ticket on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I've been to Broadway, well, once. Mm-hmm. And I will say that if I ever did go back to New York, I would stay in Times Square and just go see shows, you know, because I don't know what else the rest of New York has, but I really like Times Square.
The Cloisters.
Square. Yeah.
They're pretty awesome, and we're talking about the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And up New York, in the Bronx.
If you do have the opportunity to go, what was your favorite play in New York? Do you remember?
I actually have not been to New York.
Oh, I'm really? Sorry. I thought we said that earlier. No, okay.
No, I have been to London 5 times, and I have never been to New York City. Is that not just the worst? Oh, my gosh. Especially for somebody who's really into theater, but
well, yeah. I mean, we went and we saw How to Succeed in Business. You'll have to correct me. How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Oh yeah, I've heard
is that okay?
I can't remember the exact title, but yeah, I've heard of it.
So
yeah.
We went there because it had Daniel Radcliffe in it, and so my wife really wanted to see it. He did a pretty good job, and it had John Larroquette, but it was really interesting to see how the production goes on. You know, how much effort is put into this, and quite frankly, how big the theater actually is. I mean, it's huge. Speaking of theaters, it was really interesting because we just did a kayak trip down the Wabash. So we're in Indiana. So we stopped off in Wabash, and I did not realize they had an enormous theater there. It holds like 1,600 people. And one of the things, there's this hotel, a very nice hotel. I can't remember what the name of it was off the top of my head. But it was, the lady was telling us about it, that it, you can see any play that you see in New York there. Because they do everything there. Because it's huge. And but of course, they're having the same problems. Is it's a 1,600-seat theater, and they can't open it up. So if you are into the arts and, you know, you live locally, or wherever you live, I mean, there's got to be an outlet when it comes back that you can experience. You know, you can actually be a part of that.
Another thing that's being done that's a creative concept is Fat Turtle Theater Company is one of the local companies that's doing shows, and they are doing a 10-minute play festival in August, but they are filming it, and they will be streaming it on Facebook Live. And they've actually done a couple of shows during this pandemic. So the first show that they did a 1-minute play festival, which actually, I mean, it's like super short, obviously. Those are actually semi-popular around the world. There's a play festival called GI60 that is a 1-minute play festival that is usually in New York and in, I believe, Leeds, England. It's 60 1-minute plays from playwrights all over the world. And I know, right?
I mean, you have to edit your butt off. I mean, there would have to be, I think that would take longer to come up with a play for 1 minute than it would for you to do a 3-hour play.
It really takes a lot of creativity to get it down and to think of a really, you know, good concept for a 1-minute play. And really the master of the 1-minute play, in my opinion, is a local playwright named Mark Harvey Levine. He writes a lot of short plays, 10-minute plays, 1-minute plays, and monologues and whatnot. So Fat Turtle did a 1-minute play festival that they did streaming on Facebook Live with Zoom. Mark had, I think, 3 1-minute plays in there, and they were brilliant. They were absolutely brilliant. He won the best play of the night.
Okay, I've got to see this now. I'm going to look this up because
you can look on Facebook Live on the Fat Turtle Theater Company Facebook page. Their videos are on there, and you should watch. It's super great.
I mean, to think about a 1-minute play.
Yeah.
I mean, I have never heard of this until right now. Right. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah. So, I know. I wrote one too, but I think mine is better in a live theater, you know, kind of situation. But Mark, he can do anything. This guy is brilliant. So one of his 1-minute plays was two characters are, you know, just hanging out. And this woman comes up and tags somebody and says, "Tag, you're it. I've been it for 27 years and finally you're going to be it." And it's just the funniest thing ever. And it's only a 1-minute play. And, you know, it's about this woman who's just been holding on to this grudge for, you know, all these years and everything. So funny. And then he wrote another 1-minute play, the one that won. It's called The Order. And it's a man and a woman out to dinner and they're ordering something. And, you know, well, what would you like to order? And, you know, I would like to order a relationship. Oh, yes, I like a relationship, but no commitment. Oh, I'd like a marriage. Oh, I'd like a, you know, they're going back and forth about talking about relationships, you know. So funny. And so that was, you know, part of the Fat Turtle Theater Company's 1-minute play festival, and it won the award for the night.
But I gotta tell you, you won because you wrote a 1-minute play. You won.
It's so great. So great. So Mark Harvey Levine is like the master at this. Well, Fat Turtle also had a monologue festival where they asked for 3-minute monologues for one character. And so I had 2 monologues in that. Mark had some monologues. And then another playwright, local playwright, Elizabeth Speckman, had a called Suburban Buffalo Sighting that was hilarious. And and she won that night. So it was really great. We had some super great local talent in playwriting and acting.
Again, when we're sitting here talking about this, you know, if you have the ability to go out and see a local play when this pandemic is over and support the arts, because it's going to need your support.
Right.
Bottom line, it's going to need your support. Quite frankly, if you can go see a 1-minute play, I mean, I think I would pay to go see a 1 minute play because I have never heard of this, and to put that much content into 1 minute, kudos, you know.
Yeah, and usually those things, these shorter plays, are a part of a festival, so that you know, there might be like 6 or 7 10-minute plays, or maybe 20 1-minute plays or something. And they're just so much fun. And so the next thing that Fat Turtle is doing is they're going to do a 10-minute play festival in partnership with the Theater at the Fort at Fort Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to do 10-minute plays with the actors actually in the theater at Fort Bend. And they're filming them. And then they will show them over 3 consecutive weekends on Facebook Live.
Oh,
so okay. It'll be in the theater with actors, but it won't have an audience. And then they'll be, you know, showing them. And the nice thing about that is that Fat Turtle is going to not charge for it, but they're going to take donations. And any donations that they get, they obviously have to pay Theater at the Fort, but any proceeds that Fat Turtle gets to keep, they're actually going to be paying the actors and the writers for for their time. So
good.
Yeah. So, I mean, not very many community theaters or, starting kind of professional theaters, not many of them can actually pay their actors or directors or writers. To be able to be paid, even if it's a small amount, is like a real luxury for local playwrights, I'm afraid. So anyway, I really appreciate that Aaron Cleveland, he's the owner, director of Fat Turtle Theater. He believes in paying people, and I really think that should be applauded for sure.
Definitely.
So there are some opportunities. I mean, Phoenix Theater hasn't been doing much in the way of like showing productions, but they did do a reading of a play by Tom Horan called Typhoid Mary that was really good.
That's a good time for it.
Oh my God. I have to say, like, listening to a play about Typhoid Mary in the pandemic was a mind trip.
Wow.
Because you sort of sympathize with the people who are like, oh my God, lock her up. She's so, like, you know, scary or whatever. Because you're just like in this self-preservation mode.
Mm-hmm.
But then I feel like so ambivalent because I feel so sorry for Mary, who's like locked up all by herself because she's, you know, carrying typhoid, but is not like experiencing herself, but she's like killing people because she's a cook and cooking for people. So like, what do you do in that situation? Is it worth it to take away one person's civil liberties in order to save like a huge group of people? It's like, if we weren't in a pandemic, I'd feel so sorry for Mary. It's like, oh my God, what do you do? I don't know.
Well, see, there we go. We have some theaters are actually taking action. Some production companies are actually taking action to kind of move us into the new era, if you will, of theater. They should be commended. But again, while we're out there and we're thinking, hey, this is not a big deal, it is.
It's huge.
You know, so think about that when life is kind of back to normal or whatever our new normal is.
When you flip on the TV because you need a break.
Right. Think about the artist, the screenwriter, everybody, the carpenters that put the set up.
Right.
You know, these are all people that are being affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thank you for coming on, talking about this, actually keeping us up to date with what's going on.
And educated what free stuff is out there from the museum tours, the virtual tours, the shows that you can watch that are being Facebook Live or YouTube that you can watch Broadway plays for free is really amazing.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, thank you so much for coming on, talking about this. And again, never, never change your name. Dr. Epic Harris, it is a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, another great show with Dr. Epic Harris. Again, great name. You know, now we know a little bit more that's going on locally with our arts, kind of nationally now.
Well, internationally. We talked a lot about, you know, the free online virtual tours you can get all over the world at different museums and different things. That is a great opportunity to go and kind of support those avenues that maybe you've never seen some of those things before. But, you know, when we start moving into opening things up and going towards the end of the year and into next year, I think people really need to consider that these people have taken a huge hit, probably the biggest hit of any industry, and that we really need to find ways to support the arts and fund the arts again.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you're out there and you do have the ability to help support the arts, find out from your local area what you can do to probably give back. So then that way, when they do come back, it won't be so devastating.
Exactly.
Well, we're about out of time for this show, and we wanted to thank Dr. Epic Harris for doing this show with us, telling us about what's going on. And remember, if you want to listen to any of our past shows, you have plenty of choices.
Right on the drop down, right here on IndieAirRadio.com or any of the podcast platforms, you can listen to, I think it's well over 200 shows that are on the podcast platforms now. So
absolutely. And if you want to support us, we do have a tip jar. And feel free to put any amount you want in there or think about becoming a sponsor of the show.
That's right. $10 a month and you'll send kids to school in Ecuador.
That's right. So until next week, live every day of your life.
On purpose.
On purpose.
You've been listening to Living on Purpose. This podcast is supported by members of Indie Air Radio and is underwritten by the Molinaro Family Memorial. 80% of all membership revenue received in support of this podcast supports student scholarships through New Thought Living, a not-for-profit 501c3 organization. To find out how you can support students through this podcast, visit the Living on Purpose webpage at indieairradio.com. Past episodes of Living on Purpose can be found at the Indie Air Radio website and heard on Spotify, Apple, Google Play, and Stitcher. Thanks for listening to Living on Purpose on Indie Air Radio.